Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. Today's Tuesday, May 29th, 2018. We're going to talk about some football today, and joining me to do that, frequent contributor to the program. Some would call her the professor, ESPN's Mina Kimes. Mina, what's up?
You know I don't like that. You know I'm not trying to come at John Clayton with the nickname theft.
Here's the thing,
every
though.
Time.
I would love a Mina Kimes, John Clayton Twitter feud. That would be incredible.
Does John Clayton still... So he used to have my all-time favorite... I feel like I've mentioned it on this podcast, but I don't care. No, he changed it. Darn it. He used to have my favorite Twitter banner, which was he had his tiny headshot, and then the banner was just a version. It was the same headshot, but like in the corner and then a blank space. But now he's got a large picture of himself.
He's
but it
a
was
professional.
My favorite Twitter banner.
He's a professional. We would never take that title away from John Clayton. He is the professor for all time.
The best.
Now, speaking of the best, Mina Kimes, I think you're regarded as at least one of the best Bachelorette correspondents. And as we record this, I have to admit, I like that your reaction to that was not yes or no, just mm. I have not watched...
I'll accept that.
I have not watched the first episode of this season of The Bachelorette as it went in direct opposition to pretty much every single sporting event last night, but... I believe there is at least one member of football Twitter on this year's Bachelorette. Am I not mistaken?
You are correct. PFF Mike Renner, I think is his full name, is a contestant. And there are also two football players. Colton Underwood, who is a undrafted free agent who I don't think ever really caught on with the team. And then most famous for asking Allie Reisman out on Twitter or YouTube or something and... appears to not be trying to play football anymore. And then Clayton Harbor, who I had actually heard of, might be, you know, one of the few professional athletes on the show that I was like, oh, wow, that guy, okay. He's like a definite, you know, streaming in week 15 when you're screwed kind of tight end.
Missouri tight end.
But BFF Mike is obviously, you know, the one of us. And he made it. He advanced, which was kind of surprising because he got very little screen time. Not a lot for PFF Mike. But and his entrance was not great. And I like Mike. I like his analysis. Seems like a good dude. Not a good entrance.
Do you think we can talk about this reliably, though? I feel like it's too close to home.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, are we going to be rooting for him or the players? This brings up a real divide, like the blog boys versus the athletes kind of thing. I mean, there was a lot. Obviously, there have been many jokes about this. But when he was first named as a cast member, my initial response was, is he going to grade them after the dates? And then are they going to get mad and say, you didn't actually watch the tape?
If only. That is a topic we might not have time to get to in today's show, because we have a lot to cover.
Sadly.
All right, we're going to get to these off-season grades for the NFC in a moment. First, wanted to talk about our partners, SeatGeek. And of course, the NBA Finals are coming up. Who could have figured it'd be Cavs Warriors 4? Who could have seen LeBron James facing the Warriors in the finals happening? But it's been a pretty fun series in the past, and if you want to go to that or any other sporting event, any other concert, any other big event coming up, the best place to get tickets is with SeatGeek. Because SeatGeek is not going to rip you off. SeatGeek is going to get tickets from all over the web, crawling all day, every day. They're going to use their deal score technology to rate the tickets so you know you're getting a good deal. You're not going to get some ridiculous, impossible offer that you're going to end up regretting. And then you're going to get tickets that are reliable, delivered directly to you via email or UPS. However the tickets work, you're going to get the tickets, and they're going to be reliable tickets. SeatGeek has been wonderful with our customers in the past, with our listeners, with me personally. I use SeatGeek all the time. And unfortunately, I so frequently that I no longer have access to my own promo code. But you do. If you haven't used SeatGeek before, you can get $20 back on your first SeatGeek purchase by using my promo code, which is Barnwell, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. Use that promo code on the SeatGeek app, and you'll get $20 back when you make your first purchase on SeatGeek today. Today, we are going to cover the NFC, and we're going to grade each team's offseason. I don't know about you, it's a foolproof process. No grade has ever been inaccurate before, so I'm really excited. I feel like we can really definitively grade every team's offseason. Now, granted, you are someone who at least, I would say you're a casual supporter at the very least of the Seattle Seahawks. Do you want to start with the Seahawks?
Casual.
Casual. Do you want to start with the Seahawks or end with the Seahawks on today's show?
Let's not start with them because I'd like to start this off on a high note. Let's get to the Seahawks offseason later.
Let's start as far from the Seahawks as possible. Then let's go to the NFC East. Let's start with the Dallas Cowboys, who I don't think I'm especially impressed with. And it's funny watching other teams where you think about the Bears, for example. And we'll talk about the Bears, and I might have some issues with what they've done, but there's a plan of, okay, we have this young quarterback. We're going to surround him with as many receivers and offensive linemen as possible. The Cowboys don't really seem to be that concerned with giving Dak Prescott people to work with, and it's very confusing to me.
Yeah, well, so, you know, there were some real areas of need going into the draft, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, wide receiver. They added Allen Hurns, and then, speaking of the NFL Twitter world, much maligned receiver Tavon Austin, which mm-hmm. I forgot that they added him. That's, you know, a bit of a buzzkill. And then, with Witten leaving, that's a whole, linebacker was an area of need, and they hit all those in the draft, but yes. It's kind of, like, that's it. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, okay, I like Leighton Vander Esch. I like the Michael Gallup selection. It was a player I liked a lot in college, but mm-hmm. it's not enough, it feels
right.
like.
It doesn't really add up where it's like, okay, well, we addressed this, but even if Des Bryant is a limited version of his former self, you're not really replacing Des Bryant with a third-round pick. Jason Witten was not the guy he might have been 3 or 4 years ago. Dalton Schultz is a fourth-round pick. He's not going to suddenly hop in and be, like, a Jason Witten clone. Leighton Vander Esch is a useful player, but, you know, realistically, like, teams aren't getting a lot of snaps from their outside linebackers who aren't pass rushers. And Leighton Vander Esch, we'll see what happens. Certainly he's going to mm-hmm. be, I think, a useful player for them. But, I mean, this is a team now that they want to run the football, and that's fine. And Ezekiel Elliott should still be a good running back. The offensive line, they drafted Connor Williams, who should help a little bit, give them another option there with the right side of that line. With Lyle Collins moving back to guard. You know, is this offensive line going to be good? Probably. Is the running game going to be good? Probably. But think about the weapons that Dak Prescott is throwing to. It's Schultz at tight end, Jeff Swaim, Rico Gathers, David Wells, who I don't think is the pitcher, but I don't believe. Is he still with us? David Wells, the pitcher.
What position would he be playing on the Cowboys? Well, I guess wide receiver.
He's playing wide receiver. He's tight end. He's still with us, thankfully. I was a little concerned. I think I got him confused with another portly pitcher from the 90s, but hopefully that's just my mistake. Now, at wide receiver,
this is like how I always think John Goodman is dead and he's alive, because I always confuse him with Jim Belushi, which makes no sense, I realize, mm-hmm. but I am constantly surprised by, including today, because he was in the news, Roseanne was in the news, the continued existence of John Goodman is a constant delight and surprise to me.
It's a very topical conversation to have on this podcast with Roseanne talk. But then at wideout, it's Tavon Austin, who the Cowboys are already suggesting is going to get, or, you know, is going to get 10 to 15 touches per game, which is exactly, it's like Jeff Fisher is speaking through the Cowboys somehow. But then Allen Hurns, Terrence Williams, Cole Beasley. I mean, there's a lot of like number two, number three guys here, but I just don't see how this offense is going to be effective moving the ball. If they're not getting 6 yards of carry on the ground.
Yeah. I guess the Connor Williams selection, I forgot, you know, when I was talking about the draft. That's one mm-hmm. I liked a lot, too, mostly because I trust Mike Golick Jr.'s evaluation of offensive linemen in college more than my own, and he liked that pick. And so, you know, I was enthused by that. That's an area of, obviously, it happens so often in the NFL, I feel like, where we get used to these offensive lines being amazing, like mm-hmm. Baltimore and Cincinnati come to mind, where there's so much homegrown draft talent, and then it hits them really quickly, like the sudden decline. So I think the fact that they're still refreshing there, I think, is smart. You know, it's good mm-hmm. GMing. But you're right. It's just no weapons for Dak at wide receiver or tight end. And then I think this still looks like a very average defense to me. Mm-hmm. There's just it's an interesting defense, right? Because, you know, with Marinelli, they sort of outskied their tips. Is that the expression?
Like, I don't think so.
I think that
we can go with it.
I'm going cross sport here. we keep waiting for them to heavily regress, and they keep being kind of average, mm-hmm. right? Is that fair?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I expect from them this season.
Yeah, I think that's fair. What grade do you give them, though, for your offseason?
I would say just a C.
I went C minus.
C minus.
Yeah.
A gentleman's F.
The gentleman's F. I'm a very negative grader, as you're going to say. Right. Why not?
Oh, no.
Yeah. Speaking of, the New York Giants, who changed their head coach, changed their general manager, drafted Saquon Barkley quite famously. Not quite blog boys, but certainly don't seem to be very fond of people who know how to type, based on the post-draft press conference from Dave Gettleman. I have to admit, though, I think otherwise, outside of the Saquon Barkley pick, where I think they're getting a good player and just not, you know, paying a very good price for him, I don't really hate the rest of the moves they made this offseason. I think Nate Solder, even though they overpaid, is someone who was really valuable at left tackle. They desperately needed help there. Training for Alec Ogletree has been a position of need for a long time. Again, the price tag I don't love, but I think the player is totally fine. You know, there are moves like Jonathan Stewart coming in. It doesn't necessarily excite me, but a lot of the guys who left...
I didn't even know he was on the... Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's weird that they signed him, and then, like, 2 months later, they used the second overall pick on a running back.
Saquon, yeah.
I mean, but the guys they added...
I can't feel great.
Right. Like, the guys who came out, Brandon Marshall, Dwayne Harris, Devon Kennard, Kenny Robinson, Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie, Orleans Darkwa, Shane Vereen, all these guys who came out, like, it kind of made sense. You kind of figure, no matter who the GM was, they were going to leave. And Justin Pugh and Weston Richburg were guys who I think they would have liked to keep, but the price tags for them are pretty significant. So I don't really fault them for a lot of the moves they made. I don't think they were in a great situation heading into this offseason, and I don't love the Barkley pick, but I think overall, otherwise, I thought it was okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's also the loss of JPP, right, which financially made a ton of sense. I think the amount of cap space I don't have in front of me, but it's pretty significant. When the move was made, I agreed with it. But not really sure how they're going to generate much of a pass rush, right? I mean, they hired the guy from the Cardinals, James Betcher, who's probably going to change the scheme. So Olivier Vernon's going to move around. They drafted Lorenzo Carter, too, who I liked a lot, but, you know, he's not JPP. And so... So I think that's a really area of thinness for them, you know, and even though I don't mind some of the selections, and I think the defense should revert a little bit, maybe. You know, there was a lot of bounce from last year to the previous year to last year.
For sure.
I think the lack of pass rush is going to hurt them, especially since they didn't really replace JPP's production.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that... it's going to be a defense that's a work in progress. They're really a top-heavy team on defense. They had a bunch of stars who, in 2016, were healthy and played really effective football, and they were a great defense. 2017, whether they were injured, whether they were suspended, whether they were just actively feuding with their teammates, that was not quite the case. I don't love the Mike Shula hire at offensive coordinator.
Oh.
I just don't see that being a great fit with Eli. But we'll see. I mean, certainly it'll be more protection. You hope the offense is going to be healthier. And the Odell Beckham contract is still sort of hanging over things. But it comes back to the Barkley thing for me, where it's just, you know, again, if he's a good player, great. I think he's going to be a very solid running back, possibly even a franchise running back. But that's such an opportunity to get a guy who's going to make a significant dent into your salary cap, where you're going to get a guy who's worth $15 or $16 million a year for $8 million a year. And they seem to have aggressively went in the opposite direction.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because of the improvement on the offensive line, the investment, and then the investment at running back, they do seem to be kind of going all in on trying to make the running game, which obviously has been horrendous now for like three or four years.
A decade.
A decade. Okay.
It feels like a decade.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's just a very anachronistic approach. We'll get to the Seahawks later, but it's unusual, and it's kind of the only thing that makes sense if you're holding on to Eli. But I think you and I both agree that holding on to Eli or going all in on Eli was not the right decision. So it feels short termist in a way, but to what end? Especially, you know, in the division with the Eagle, I don't know. I just don't see them. I don't think they've made themselves more competitive.
Right, I agree. Although I will say, if Saquon Barkley scores a touchdown in week one and does like a I'm typing touchdown celebration, I'm in on the Saquon Barkley pick. I'll change my mind.
Do you think he knows that the Black Boys turned against him?
Do you think the
don't draft a running back thing?
I hope he knows and just does not care. Because really, at the long run, it's not Saquon Barkley's fault. He's a running back. He's a super talented player, and he's probably going to be a great running back. It's not his fault that the market's sort of changed for running backs, but... I hope that he has better things to do than read blogs.
Shouldn't we all? So what grade do you give the Giants?
I'm giving them a C. I do think that we're going to look back and sort of hope that they had maybe taken someone else the second overall pick. And again, if I'm wrong, I will certainly be happy about it. But I do think that running back is not the way to go. What about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go C minus. I'm going to go negative on you just because you don't get a shot like that to get your quarterback of the future very often. And I don't think they're going to be bad enough to get it again this season. Right. Like I think they're probably going to be at least, you know, 8-8 or something. And I think they'll regret not having taken that opportunity when it was there with that draft.
Yeah, for sure. Philadelphia Eagles sort of just, you know, treaded water. Some minor moves. They lost Torrey Smith, Trey Burden, who you figure was going to move on, given that he was the second tight end in an offense that relies pretty heavily on Zach Ertz, like Garrett Blunt, Vinny Curry, Michael Kendricks, Patrick Robinson, Donnie Jones. So guys who were useful players for them last year, but given that they have invested so much on the, you know, the 22 starters on this football team, you kind of figured we're going to move on. And given those sort of constraints, still made a bunch of moves that were nice. Mike Wallace comes in to replace Torrey Smith. Michael Bennett was acquired via trade to sort of supplement the pass rush with Vinny Curry moving. Khalo Dinata is going to come in on, I think, a short-term deal to take over for Bo Allen, who moved on to Tampa. So I really don't have too many faults. It's a pretty quiet offseason for them, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just, the only thing I don't like is if it's true, not moving Foles for the 35th pick just doesn't really make sense to me. Unless Carson Wentz, they're dubious about his ability to start week one, in which case it makes perfect sense, right? But if that's not true, I just don't think any backup quarterback in the NFL is worth more than the 35th pick. Wow. And that's, maybe you disagree. We haven't talked about this, but when I saw that piece of news, I thought, wow, the Browns really lucked out too, because I think the combination of Taylor and Mayfield, in just in terms of risk management, right, is an upside and pass production is actually a lot better than Foles.
Yeah, I agree. I will say that you're saying this to someone who is one bad hit away from having Austin Davis as their starting quarterback for the foreseeable future.
They added some Navy guy. We're talking about the Seahawks. They have a punter who apparently is better than half the quarterbacks in the NFL.
That's
and can
true.
Perfectly place 40-yard punts, which I really want to see. We will get to that. The other thing about the Eagles, I agree with everything you said. It's really just the good stay good. You know, I was a little bit concerned about Patrick Robinson losing him at slot corner, although he might have had an uncharacteristically good season. But Sidney Jones, UW product, should be coming online. Darby should be back. So I think there'll be, you know, some reinforcements coming in the secondary that should be interesting to watch that play out.
Yeah, I mean, that's been their plan, is really just to, they don't want to spend a lot of money at cornerback, but they're going to really pound it with draft picks. So Sidney Jones makes sense, playing a bigger role this year. And, you know, they stumbled onto Patrick Robinson last year. It's not like they really were expecting him to be that guy. He just happened to be really good. So hopefully they can keep developing defensive backs to play behind that pass rush. What'd you give them for the offseason?
I'll give them a B+. B+.
So you're grading very casually here, I feel like. Whereas I have my grades carefully laid out. There's an Excel spreadsheet about I don't want to be too easy. I gave them a B.
All right, I'll go B.
I don't want to say the B+ is wrong. I'm just saying I gave them a B. I just feel like they sort of treaded the water. Like they're in good shape, obviously, and they're not in significantly better or worse shape than they were heading into the offseason. Washington, it depends on, I think, how you view this offseason. Like, if you treat the Kirk Cousins situation as a sunk cost, I think this is a really effective offseason, all things considered. But if you don't treat that as a sunk cost, then they lost a franchise quarterback for a comp pick. So that's terrible.
Yeah. I think it's, if we're just grading offseasons, okay, and we're not, I'm repeating you basically, but if we're not considering losing Kirk Cousins as a thing that was inevitable this offseason, if we're looking at the broader, you know, strategy, which was obviously insanely stupid now in retrospect, but if we're just focusing on this offseason, I think it was great, right?
Sure.
Because just for the value and they got for Smith, who I don't think Kirk Cousins is much better than Alex Smith personally. It's not much of a discount relative to Cousins, especially if you look at the cash flow. But again, Kirk Cousins is gone. If we're zeroing in on this offseason, I don't think they could have done better than Alex Smith. And I really like it. You know, I like it for this team. I like it for the offense, and I like Alex Smith. So I think it was a pretty good decision.
Has there been any point during the last 4 years where you watched Paul Richardson play and thought he was worth $40 million over 5 years?
No, but what? I think he's pretty good. Obviously, the thing with him has always been the injury. Yeah, no, I actually, I'm higher on him, I think, than some.
I have breaking news here on the podcast, Mina.
Oh, no.
Breaking NFL news, not Roseanne related, although okay. We do have a Roseanne block coming later on, I'm sure. Breaking Seahawks news for the podcast.
Oh, God.
The Seahawks have signed a wide receiver.
Dez Bryant?
Not Dez Bryant, but you're not that far off.
Please don't be Brandon Marshall.
Oh, I have some bad news for you.
It's Brandon Marshall?
It's Brandon Marshall.
He posted
a very delightful Instagram photo, though.
For how much is the...
We don't appear to have a price yet. It's only been reported by Brandon Marshall on his Instagram in a Seahawks jersey. So he could just be faking, who knows. But you don't sound too thrilled about this one.
Well, no, it's all about the price. Oh, okay. So Danny Kelly, friend of the pod, friend of both of us, just DM me, let's effing go. This is like behind the curtain stuff that no one should see. I mean, look, I'm fine with it if it's for nothing, you know, like great.
I mean, literally nothing.
Let's get that. No, like $1 million, $2 million, whatever. I mean, maybe over the course of the podcast, more details will trickle out that'll increase my horror and change my, let's get to that later. So,
okay. So back to Washington.
Paul Richardson is much better than Brandon Marshall. Is he $40 million? You know what I mean? I think he's very talented. There's a reason why he was drafted where he was. His catch radius, as we've seen some of the circus catches he made over there, is insane. Mm-hmm. He's just a really nice, I mean, he's a, I'm sorry, I'm still digesting the Brandon Marshall news. Let's go to the rest of the Reds, their off season in general. Obviously, this team is funny because, like, if you look at where they finished in DVOA, it's like fine, it's average, but then when you dig into it, it's just horrendous, both running the ball and stopping the run, and obviously that's something they tried to address in the draft, going for Deron Payne with the first pick, the run stuffer, and on the other side, taking Darius Geis, which I thought was a great deal where they got him. So that's, you know, just the fact that they addressed that probably helps.
Yeah, I mean, this was an offensive line that was really beat up all of last year. Injuries up and down the line. And their running game has not been effective for a couple years now. So you figure, okay, our offensive line is going to be healthier. We're going to bring in Darius Geis, who seems to have the best path to being a starting running back of the guys on that roster. You know, I think Chris Thompson's super useful, but probably not going to be your primary back and run the ball 200 times. They drafted Grant Christian in the third round, another offensive lineman who is going to help out with depth on that line. So, I think, unlike the Giants, where it feels like they're investing a ton in running the football without maybe having the infrastructure to succeed, I do think if the offensive line's healthy, Washington should be able to run the ball effectively. Yeah. I don't think they've invested, you know, they didn't invest the second overall pick in a running back as opposed to the Giants, where they really invested a ton at running back. So do you have a Greg? I guess, do you want to grade it based on if Kirk Cousins is a sunk cost or if he's not a sunk cost?
There's one other thing I'm concerned. Sorry, I'm just I got their depth chart open. And the other thing is, like, I'm a little bit concerned about this secondary. I'm just looking at, there's Orlando Scandrick on one side, Norman, who I personally think regressed a bit. That's a little concerning. And then they lost Kendall Fuller, right, in the Alex Smith trade. So that's, who's very good. So that, the slot corner, that's concerning as well. I think this team is gonna bounce back big time on offense, in part due to the, you know, offensive line, as you mentioned, was really beat up, but I could see them regressing a little bit on defense. As far as the total offseason goes, again, we're going to look at this just this offseason, I think, if that's okay with you, and not evaluate the Kirk Cousins, you know.
Wasn't okay with me? What happens then if I say no? just descend into chaos? Yes, it's okay with me, please.
Okay. All right. Now that I have that approval from you to take this approach, then I would give it a B. I really would, just because I thought the Alex Smith, in that little vacuum, I think it's a really good move.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the secondary is going to be a concern. Bashaud Breeland also left and appears to be in limbo after his weird injury. But yeah, Kendall Fuller, losing him it's going to hurt. I'm going to go B as well. I do think they made pretty logical moves. And I think given the constraint of losing a possible franchise quarterback, it's, you know, they did okay. Chicago Bears, I think, are a team where maybe we're going to disagree more, because I feel like I'm on an island a little bit when it comes to the Bears.
Yes, the moves they're hipster. So I'm guessing, yes, the hipsters love the Bears. So I'm guessing you're anti-Bears.
Am I anti-hipster? Is that what my reference?
Give it to me. No, give me the inject it into my veins. I want to hear your anti-Bears takes.
All right. So here's the problem with the Bears. The logic behind their moves, but in terms of we want to surround Mitch Trubisky with weapons, I'm all for it. That makes total sense to me. You want to be the Rams? Go nuts. But and Allen Robinson signing a guy like him to a big money deal, I'm all for it. $16 million a year for a guy who I think is a legitimate number one wide receiver who made Blake Bortles look good. Yeah, I'm in on that. Signing Trey Burden's fine, but Trey Burden makes more than Zach Ertz does now. He's, I think, the third highest paid tight end in football in terms of the 3-year value of his contract. Taylor Gabriel is a guy who was a street free agent 2 years ago who had a incredibly fluky run of touchdowns for Atlanta in 2016 and was an anonymous receiver for most of last year. Chase Daniel, I don't know what Chase Daniel does. It's magic, whatever Chase Daniel does to get them to keep giving him millions of dollars per year. I like their draft. I think Roquan Smith, James Daniel, Anthony Miller, positions of need and guys who you figure make logical sense for them, but they handled their two restricted free agents really poorly with Kyle Fuller. They franchised, they transitioned him.
This makes you so mad. I knew you were going to go here. Because every offseason, I've known you now for like, what, 5 years, six years or something? Mm-hmm. Nothing makes Will Barnwell angrier than teams.
It's so simple. It's so easy. Why would you put the...
It's like your thing. It's okay.
It's like, you know what, if teams want to make really, like, sort of obtuse mistakes, it's fine. You know what, I make mistakes all the time. But it's like, if you make a, like, kind of a dumb thing where you give Cameron Meredith the tender where you don't get compensation and you get an offer from somewhere else, and then I hear from Bears fans for a week about how it's like, oh, they just want the other team to set the market. They know what they're doing. You're an idiot. And then the Bears don't match the offer, and then I don't hear from a single Bears fan who said anything to me. I don't love that. It's not my favorite thing.
Wait, you mean to tell me that people got mad at you on the internet, were wrong, and then didn't come back and apologize? That's crazy. I've never heard of that happening on Twitter. That's insane. Wow. What an insane experience you had.
It was definitely unique to me. But I just, you know, like, it just seems like it's so unnecessary. Like, if you're going to miss on a draft pick, that's going to happen. But why would you not just spend the extra, like, $800,000 if you're willing to commit all this money to Chase Daniel? Why not just take that money and just save the extra $3 million and make Kyle Fuller your franchise tag guy so you don't have to worry about him getting an offer sheet and then having to pay him as a franchise guy for 2 years as opposed to 1 year, which is the offer sheet he got from the Packers? Why not give Cam Meredith the extra $800,000 so you know he's on your roster this year? I just don't see the logic in that. And if the Bears want the rest of the league to set the market for their free agents, that's great, but nobody else in football does that. So I don't know why the Bears are suddenly a smart exception to that rule.
So I think a lot of the enthusiasm around the Bears and certain corners of football Twitter that I was alluding to earlier when I called them kind of the hipster favorite this offseason, a lot of that is about Matt Nagy, right? Because, you know, the Bears – basically, the hope is that they found their Doug Peterson, okay? Mm-hmm. Like a former, you know, Chiefs guy who is creative, willing to do... Oh, I thought I got the Brandon Marshall. No information yet. willing to integrate more college principles into the offense, which he, you know, did in Kansas City as well, and that they've got an athletic quarterback. So I think people are very excited about that move. Now, I'm not totally sold on Mitch Trubisky, but... that's not going to play into my grade here because Mitch Trubisky's the quarterback and that was the decision made last season. But, you know, I will say that that's my hesitation about this offense right now. It's just I don't think we have enough. We haven't seen enough from Mitch Trubisky to think, you know, I really form a definitive opinion about him. Certainly not a positive one. I did like the Nagy hire though, you know, for the reasons I just described. And I think compared to some of the coaches hired and some of the coordinators hired, if I was a Bears fan, I'd be very excited, comparatively. So I do like that. On the other side of the ball, you know, I'm looking at the depth chart right now. The secondary, I know they kept Prince and Fuller. They're fine. You know, like, they're okay. I don't think I would say just looking at the entire defense, that's probably the weak part. They finished pretty average, although they had some injuries. And I think Roquan Smith, one of my favorite players in the draft. And I think he's one of the few players I'm comfortable saying will probably be an immediate contributor on the team. But beyond that, you know, I don't think the defense, like, dramatically improved in any way.
Yeah, but I think the best thing might have been keeping Vic Fangio around, who kind of seemed like was a little upset about not getting the head coaching job and kind of threatened to move, but they were able to keep him around. And I think that, you know, if they're going to emulate the Rams, which is clearly their plan, you know, having the young offensive coach and having the old, really smart defensive coordinator and keeping him around seems to be an important part of that process. So the one thing I'm concerned about with this team is not really the secondary as much as it is the offensive line, which I think that's sort of the thing missing when it comes to their plan of emulating the Rams, where the offensive line on paper last year looked like it was going to be very solid, and it was off and on decent for most of the year. But I mean, this is an offensive line that's not as effective as it was this time last year. Josh Sitton left or was cut and then did not sign back with the team. So that's a hole. Bradley Sowell is going to be competing with James Daniels. You know what Bradley Sowell life is like. But James Daniels, as a rookie, he might be good, but rookie offensive linemen are always it's always a risky game. The tackles here are not necessarily great in Charles Leno and Bobby Massey. And then Kyle Long, super talented player, but last couple of years has pretty much been absent due to injury or been playing tackle where he was very mediocre. So we're still a couple of years removed from him being a very effective and healthy interior offensive lineman. So I don't, you know, I don't know that Trubisky is going to have great protection with that offensive line this year.
Bradley Sowell, you know, was on the Seahawks and very cruelly used to tweet, "Bradley did not play so well." Not nice. I'm a bad person. All right. You've convinced me to lower my grade a little bit from what it was. I'm going to go B+.
I thought you were going to say A-.
No.
I'm going to say C+. I like a lot of what they did.
But... Whoa! Bill Barnwell says the Bears are going to be terrible.
Insane. They're going to be better this year, but I'm not as in love with their offseason as I think some other people are. But we'll see. Right. I'm sure if I'm wrong in any way in the slightest form, I'll hear about it from Bears fans in the month to come. Mm-hmm. And when I say Bears fans, I mean Robert Mays, to be clear. Detroit Lions, really a boring offseason outside of replacing Jim Caldwell with Matt Patricia and the sort of drama that evolved over the last couple of weeks when it came to that. In terms of their personnel changes, not really much. Eric Ebron's out. I'm sure a couple Lions fans threw a party when that happened. Luke Wilson on the Vine, Toyololo coming in at tight end for Ebron and Fells, the Garrett Blunt signed here. I just don't feel like much has changed. Like, they're sort of in the same holding pattern where the defense still has a lot of question marks. Ziggy Ansah, they haven't made a decision about giving him a long-term contract. He's still on the franchise tag. But kind of feel like they're in the same situation they were a year ago.
Yeah, not a lot here. I'm just looking at all the changes. The draft, you know, they picked up Kerryon Johnson, the one who said he wasn't alive to watch Barry Sanders, and everybody died a little bit inside. So, I mean, you know, gosh, we were talking about the Giants not struggling with the run for a few years. It's not a lot better here.
Is it weird that, like, Ameer Abdullah, like I don't understand what happened.
Yes, I don't either. It's very weird to me. Because I think what the Lions question always been is it the line or is it the back, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I really don't have an answer for that. He was so good in college. You know, I'm like kind of a closet Nebraska fan.
In the preseason he was good that first year.
Yes, I don't get it. I really don't get it. And I don't think, I mean, they also had LeGarrette Blount. They signed Blount, right?
Yep.
I don't think Kerryon Johnson and Blount are going to solve those problems. Maybe Frank Ragnow will help. I don't know. But, you know, they're like you mentioned Ziggy Ansah, like, who's going to rush the passer on this team? I'm just looking at the depth chart and I just can't, they didn't do anything. So I just think, you know, they're another team, again, similarly to Washington, where they were kind of average passing on both sides and terrible both running the ball and stopping the run. I don't think they really solved either of those problems.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to the offensive line, they can't really invest more than they have. Two first-round picks on the left side in Taylor Decker and Ragnow, and then two really expensive free agents, TJ Lang and Ricky Wagner on the right side. Graham Glasgow presumably going to start at center after playing well over the last couple of years. So, I mean, it's, you know, there's not really a lot more they can do. It's going to have to be the running backs at this point, and if it's not, then I think you have to wonder if there's offensive changes to be made. They're not going to replace Matthew Stafford. They like Jim Bob Cooter, but it might just be a schematic thing where they have to change some things about how they run that offense to sort of build up a running game. But for a team that wants to play fast, that has come with a lot of no huddle in the past. It does surprise me to think that, like, Garrett Blunt is going to be, a really functional part of that offense.
Yeah, sorry. Breaking news. Okay, so Brandon Marshall, I swear to God I'm focused on this. Brandon Marshall, 1 year, up to $2 million with incentives. That's fine. I'm fine.
Fine.
That's
fine. Do you want to grade
crisis
that?
Crisis averted.
Do you want to grade fine. That signing?
We will get to that. Fine. Okay. As far as the lying, I don't even really want to talk about, I mean, it's like, I don't know. I actually think Luke Wilson, I it's not like a major drop off in my mind from Eric Ebron to him, by the way, but, I am surprised they didn't go tight end higher.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess C minus feels right.
I said C plus. I feel like they just had a totally average offseason. I'm not especially excited about their coaching hire, and I'm not, especially excited about their, roster changes. It kind of feels like they're the same team they were a year ago. The Green Bay Packers, a interesting offseason. They sort of
uncharacteristic
forced out Ted Thompson, placed him with Brian Gutekunst, who I think it's still way too early to evaluate him. Although I think the draft they had, all things considered, was pretty great. You take two cornerbacks in Jaire Alexander and Josh Jackson, who both had first round grades in a lot of places. In the process, you trade down, you pick up a 2019 first round pick from the New Orleans Saints, who we'll talk about them a little later. I can't really fault them for most of the moves they made and upgrading a secondary that's been their real problem over the last couple of years. And then controversy perhaps with cutting Jordy Nelson, but I don't know that necessarily it's all that bad of an idea, given that he's getting older and that he hasn't necessarily been the most effective wideout when Aaron Rodgers hasn't been on the field.
Yeah, it seems to me the only controversy over cutting Nelson was that Aaron Rodgers likes him. Like, I can't, you know what I mean? From a football standpoint, it doesn't seem like a downgrade at all. I think I liked the Jimmy Graham signing for them a lot. I like the value. I think it's going to, he's going to be a pretty significant contributor immediately. They also picked up Equanimeous St. Brown in the sixth round, who, had a lot of hype going in and kind of fell down the draft boards. That could be an interesting addition.
Do you think he fell because of his first name?
I would have thought his first name would have upgraded him,
really?
Strangely. Yeah. Equanimeous?
Equanimeous St. Brown? They drafted Equanimeous St. Brown, and then in the previous round, they drafted Marquez Valdez-Scantling, which basically just think that they are actually just trying
going
to...
Going for big names.
They're just trying to reenact the Key and Peele sketch.
Equanimeous St. Brown sounds like he should have missed minicamp to be at the royal wedding. That's what that name says to me. The draft was interesting. They went, Jackson and Alexander, the cornerbacks heavy. It's funny, the Packers remind me of what I was saying earlier about how, like, certain offensive lines, all of a sudden you're like, where did everyone go? It's like the Fresh Prince scene where Will Smith walks into the room and it's empty and he looks sad. I feel like the Green Bay Packers secondary kind of had that experience where it feels like only yesterday that they had a million cornerbacks and safeties who everybody was excited about, and suddenly, it's Jaire and Josh walking into that room and nobody's there. Gosh, remember when the Packers let Casey Hayward go? That wasn't smart. Anyways, I agree with, I don't know. I kind of like, it feels a little bit different from past off seasons. That's what I'll say.
Yeah. But is that a positive for you? What grade do you give them?
Oh, and also the Wilkerson signing, I thought was.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Mo Wilkerson. Duh.
Yeah.
Also, like for a 1 year deal for $5 million or so, that's a really solid addition to a team that's defensive line was pretty solid to begin with. So I do think that's a very reasonable upgrade from Gutekunst in his first season.
Yes, the Packers had the obvious opposite situation from the Giants and Lions, where they were, very good against the run. And this is crazy to me, by the way. The Packers were third in rushing DVOA last year. Isn't that crazy?
It does seem strange.
Yeah, very odd. But, obviously the passing numbers are irrelevant because of Rodgers' injury. I liked its offseason. I would give it a B+.
I also gave it a B+. Although, if they keep pretending that DeShone Kizer would have been, like, a first-round pick in the draft, I'm going to downgrade it to a B just on principle alone.
That was rough.
Yeah. Minnesota Vikings. Again, we talked about Kirk Cousins a minute ago. They won. They won the Kirk Cousins lottery. They bring him in to replace Case Keenum, Teddy Bridgewater, and Sam Bradford. The three-headed Hydra is no more. Also brought in Trevor Siemian, I think a very solid backup quarterback, and please don't get angry at me, signed Sheldon Richardson to a one-year deal. So I'm really happy with sort of the, those were really their only major additions, but really happy with what they did.
Yeah, I think all great moves. I think the Kirk contract ended up being surprisingly reasonable, right?
Yeah.
Especially compared to, since we're looking at this offseason, compared to some of the expectations going into it, I think great, you know,
for
good
sure.
deal. And, you know, what a terrific situation he's walking into. Although there's a little bit of uncertainty on the offensive line. Joe Berger retired, the right guard, I think. So, you know, there's just some question marks. And obviously we saw at the end of the season, Case Keenum struggled greatly because of the turnover on the offensive line, which has been a problem that's plagued them the previous 3 years and plagued them with Bradford. So I think that's going to be an interesting one. You know, there might be – Kirk Cousins certainly no stranger to playing behind an offensive line in flux after last
yes.
year. But he gets to play with maybe the two best wide receivers. I mean, you know, just like
– the best 1-2 punch in football, right?
The best 1-2 punch. Yes, I think so, right? But definitely the punch that does – the 1-2 punch that does the most for the quarterback, too. Mm-hmm. Like, that is just, you know, slot right in there. But, you know, and I love the Sheldon Richardson signing for them. I think, yeah, I thought it was a fantastic, that's really the only Seahawks loss, by the way, that really bothers me. We'll get to that. So, you know, I like that. I thought Mike Hughes was a good value and a good pick for them. You know, just giving them another slot back was smart. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't really have any quibbles with the Vikings.
Yeah. They drafted Brian O'Neill, which should help that offensive line. They should have been down to playing Rashad Hill in meaningful snaps like they were perhaps a year ago. So, I mean, they added Kirk Cousins. Like, they had a quarterback situation that was really in flux, and I don't know that necessarily he's going to play a lot better than Case Keenum did a year ago, just because Case Keenum was so good. But it feels like their floor is a lot higher. Like, you know, it was not impossible to imagine Keenum really regressing and whoever they got to replace Keenum or has a backup to Keenum not really working out. So I think they're in a really good place. I gave them an A minus, my first
A minus
so far. Yeah, why not?
Wow.
They got Kirk Cousins for free.
Yeah. Well, I'll give them, as the more we've talked about the offensive line, the more I kind of have questions. So I'll go B plus. I don't think I've given out a single A minus.
You're just a really aggressive grader. You just don't want to. You don't want to support the fine people of the NFL and the decisions they make. But we have to go to a break. We're going to come back with more Bill Barnwell Show here in a moment. Guys, I want you to take a moment right now. Forget about football. Forget about podcasting. Forget about the NBA Finals. I want you to think about your underwear. And I know, listen, it's a little weird. I understand it's not what maybe you're tuning into this show expecting me to say. But I'm guessing if you're not wearing a very certain brand of underwear I'm about to mention in a moment, you're not that excited about what you're wearing. And that's why I want to tell you about that very specific brand of underwear, MeUndies. Because I think the copy wants me to say that it's not like wearing any underwear at all, but that's not true. It's better than not wearing any underwear at all. It feels like you are being comforted by an angel who's also wearing very good underwear that not only feels great, but also looks great. MeUndies has so many different styles, so many different colors. It is honestly fun. It's exciting to go to your underwear drawer, which pretty much for the first 32 years of my life was pretty much just about, let me get another pair of uncomfortable, bland underwear and put it on and go out into the world. Things have changed. It's a joy. When I run out of MeUndies, I suddenly want to go do laundry so I have more. And honestly, I bought so many of them that I really now don't ever want to do laundry. I want to just keep wearing MeUndies over and over and over again. And I'd recommend washing them and getting multiple pairs, but if you don't want to, that's your choice as well. Now, I understand maybe you haven't tried MeUndies before. It's something that might be different to you. Here's the good news. Not only are you going to get 20% off your first pair of MeUndies if you use my promo code, you're going to get a guarantee that you and your MeUndies will be very happy together. If you try your first pair and you don't like it, MeUndies is going to do whatever they can to get you into the right pair. And if somehow that's not possible, you can keep it and they're going to refund you. So I can't think of a better reason, a better offer to try MeUndies today. 20% off that first pair. If you don't like it, you're going to get a refund. It is risk-free to try the most comfortable underwear you will ever try. So go to MeUndies.com right now. use my promo code, meundies.com/Barnwell, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. You can go to meundies.com without it. I would say you should use it, though. They'll probably keep advertising if you do, and I would appreciate that. meundies.com/Barnwell, 20% off your first pair, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. You can't beat that deal. meundies.com/Barnwell. All right, back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, joined again by Mina Kimes. We are grading the NFC off seasons. Another team that I feel like are kind of just treading water. They already have their core together.
The Atlanta Falcons. Yes, I was just guessing.
I mean, it seems like it's a pretty logical guess. We said we were finishing with the NFC West. We've already done the other two divisions.
I'm a prophet.
You are, pretty much. And you're a blog lady, if we've ever seen one before. I'm fine with what they did. The one concern I have about this team right now is that defensive line is sort of problematic in a league where you look at the Eagles and they're so deep along the defensive line. And that kind of is really a blueprint for a lot of teams. I mean, this is a Falcons team that lost, Dontari Poe, Adrian Claiborne, Courtney Upshaw, Ataya Rubin. And like losing those guys are not necessarily, well, not losing one of them is irreplaceable. Like you can probably replace one of those guys, but you're losing four guys who you'd figure are going to take meaningful snaps if they're healthy. And they didn't really replace them with anyone. They drafted, I gotta get the pronunciation right. Deidre Ensenat, in the third round, who will take some snaps in the interior. They have Jack Crawford playing next to Grady Jarrett, who is Grady Jarrett's a really underrated player, a budding superstar, but moving Vic Beasley down from linebacker to defensive end is going to help, but there's just, you'd want to have more depth. They're one injury away from having a major problem along this defensive line.
I agree completely. I actually mocked, I think, Deron Payne to the Falcons in my final first round mock for the exact reason you're describing. And I was surprised. I wasn't surprised they went Ridley with the first pick because at that point he was such a value and it was kind of crazy, right, that he had fallen to that point, I think. So at least compared to expectations. So it made sense, but obviously it's an area of luxury for them, you know, and it was kind of an interesting, it kind of made me, ask questions about Julio, which has been another weird element of the Falcons offseason. Or the only maybe weird element of the Falcons offseason is like, what's going on with Julio Jones?
Do you think there's something there?
No, I don't. I mean, so what are the pieces of evidence we have? There was the day where he like weirdly unfollowed all the Falcons on Twitter, Instagram or something. Or
and deleted all his Falcons photos on Instagram as well.
That's weird. That's like a weird thing to do. I don't think them drafting Calvin Ridley necessarily speaks to any expectations for that, but where is he? Where's Julio in his contract right now, actually?
Does he have 2 years left, I think? Maybe 3 years left? I'm going to double check now. But like, can you imagine that in your own personal life? If you deleted all the photos of Lenny on your Instagram?
I mean, first, I don't even like having that conversation. But let's say I deleted all of the photos of ESPN or I love that Lenny's so much more serious than my employer. I'm like, but like that would be a decision. Like it doesn't not mean nothing, you know.
It wouldn't be an accident.
It's pretty emo.
I wanted to be like, oh, just pruning my Instagram. I just happened to delete every photo of me in Bristol, Connecticut. Julio Jones has 3 years left on his deal.
Okay,
looks to be in the $35 million range in terms of what he has left. So not like it's not insignificant, but you think about what other guys are getting where you have someone like Allen Robinson making, I think, $16 million a year, Sammy Watkins in that same boat. You'd understand why Julio Jones might feel like he deserves a raise.
Yeah. I mean, that's a long ways out though. Jeez. Falcons defense is so interesting to me. Cause you know, as I was preparing for this, I've been looking at where all the different units ended up. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so the Falcons ended up 19th overall. That's weighted DVOA, but 20th versus pass, 20th versus run. Yep. If I told you, I don't think I would have guessed that. Like watching them in the postseason, they looked so much better than that to me.
For sure.
And which is, I think, the second consecutive year in which that's happened, where you've seen this defense like come together at the end. And I don't know why they can't play well in the beginning of the season. Like,
it does seem
what's
weird.
Up with that?
Yeah, because like this is a young defense, and when you saw them play well. Right. During the playoffs last year, you kind of figure, okay, well, they're going to take a leap. They're going to be that defense again this year. And then they weren't until the postseason when they shut down the Rams and they, you know, against Nick Foles, it looked really good. And the two games afterwards played the best against Nick Foles we saw during the postseason. So, I still believe they're going to get better just because they are young in a lot of places and there's a lot of athleticism around the defense. And I like Marquand Manuel, but I mean, they couldn't get off the field last year and it really hurt the Falcons offense. All their numbers went down because they really were not on the field a lot. I think they had the fewest possessions in all of football last year. So would like to see the defense, you know, the pass rush improves with Beasley moving back to the defensive end. It could help, but I'm just, you know, I do think the defensive line is going to be an issue, and I think the defense might get better, but it might not be as good as it seems during the postseason. So I'm going to give them a C, and part of it is that Matt Schaub is still making $4.5 million to be their backup quarterback.
I was just about to ask, who the heck is their backup quarterback? That's incredible. I'm going to give them a C minus, and the minus comes from Julio Jones' Instagrams.
Interesting. Did I say interesting? That's awful. Please don't ever turn that into a thing. Instagram.
Leave that in. All right, next team. We got to roll. We're taking way too long on the Falcons, and nothing. Falcons literally did nothing.
I bet you your role at ESPN expanded to a point where you now have more control over my show than I do.
I'll be talking to the producers later.
Carolina Panthers.
It's your show. Okay, Panthers. Yeah.
Carolina Panthers are a team that obviously in flux because of their sale, which appears to be finished now. And they actually did more than I kind of thought they would. Like, they spent serious money on Dontari Poe, but otherwise pretty quiet. They brought in Torrey Smith. I like the C.J. Anderson signing for, I think, $1.5 million. Tried to sign Bashaud Breeland. Didn't work out because of his injury. But the one real concern I have about this team, and it came up actually today. I was reading Pro Football Talk about this today. What happens if Cam Newton gets hurt?
Oh, God. Is it still Derek Anderson?
It's not even Derek Anderson. Derek Anderson has moved on. Their backup quarterback right now is Garrett Gilbert, who I have to admit.
Garrett Gilbert. Is he on the Saints?
I don't. I also thought he was on the Saints. That's Garrett Grayson.
That's Garrett Grayson.
The guy the Saints drafted.
Who's Garrett Gilbert?
Garrett Gilbert is has played on 5 different teams, including the Patriots, the Rams, the Lions, the Raiders, the Panthers. I don't know if he's had any actual NFL pass attempts before, but I believe he is there because he is familiar with Norv Turner's scheme. And I don't know about Norv Turner as Cam Newton's offensive coordinator, and I don't really know about the situation for a quarterback who, you know, I like Cam a lot. Obviously, he's not perfect, but I think overall he's a very talented player, but someone who does get hit and gets injured a fair amount.
Yeah. And right, obviously they lost Andrew Norwell.
Yes, their star guard.
Looking at the draft right now, they did not go offensive line. So, DJ Moore, which was obviously, the biggest, most obvious area of need for the Panthers, was wide receiver. Yes. So it's not surprising that they went there. Actually, I like that pick a lot. But then, they went cornerback, Dante Jackson, the LSU.
Yep, super
corner.
Undersized, super fast guy. You figure might be the long-term replacement for Captain Munnerlyn on this team. As I'm just thinking of short guy replacing short guy, which is probably too simplistic, but maybe not that simplistic realistically. And then another cornerback in Rashawn Golden, who I kind of was worried that his NFL.com scouting report said his strengths and weaknesses were both null. That's a little worrisome to me if they can't find anything. They're like, who knows? He's probably going to be okay.
It's like what people probably say about me. I do not like since we're talking off seasons and coaches matter, I was not happy about the Norv Turner signing. I mean, if I was a Panthers fan, I wouldn't be over the moon, for that.
For sure.
I just don't find him to be particularly creative or interesting, and a creative and interesting offensive coordinator with Cam Newton would be fun.
Yep.
I am happy because it continues my many years campaign to try to make NorvCore a thing, which no one is taking it seriously. Nobody ever listens to me. Hashtag NorvCore. Let's get it going.
NorvCore is actually ironically pretty normcore as well.
Norm, yeah, that's the joke.
I don't understand that. Can you explain the joke, please? I gave them a B minus. I felt like it was, I'm grading them on a curve a little bit because of the sale, because I feel like they didn't have much, they couldn't really do all that much, but I don't know. I like the CJ Anderson signing. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah. I'll go C plus. Okay. I'm being harsher than you.
Not surprisingly. I will say, I feel like I'm going to be pretty harsh on the New Orleans Saints, who, another thing I'm not fond of is trading 2 first round picks for a player who's not a quarterback. And that's exactly what they did with Marcus Davenport.
It was really stupid. I did that draft show and I mean, I was maybe outside of the Josh Allen thing, you know, that had to have been one of my most negative reactions. So then I just could not believe they did that.
I mean,
believe this team did that.
You had 16 hours of coverage, so I feel like we could probably go through and find a lot of reactions, good and bad.
Here's what, Bill, I remember it clearly because they traded up and people were like, oh, maybe it's Lamar Jackson, right?
100%.
And nobody would have guessed Marcus Davenport. Like, it didn't enter my mind. So I think I was maybe the most, because I had mentally prepared myself for Josh Allen. I did not mentally prepare myself for the Saints to trade a future first for a raw defensive end.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I
being mad again.
Just tough to believe because if you're making we got to get people around Drew Brees point. Well, number one, you did that for 2 years and it was disastrous. And then when you finally just started drafting players, you had an incredible draft last year. And number two, like you said, this is a raw defensive end. It's not like he's likely to be, you know, a guy who's going to have 12 sacks his rookie year, and watch that be a recording people bring back. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. That happens. But like, the odds are against you. I mean, you have to really believe that this guy is a, Like, how good does he have to be to justify this trade?
I think he has to take this defense, which is already rising, right, from B plus to A, which is, and I actually think that's plausible, and I don't think he'll be the one, you know, necessarily the player who elevates them to that degree, but because I like the rest of their offseason, they signed DeMario Davis, super underrated, in my opinion. Yep. Robinson, who we've already talked about. Kurt Coleman. Yep. Like, this is going to be a good defense next year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he doesn't need to be a tremendous contributor, I think, to help them sort of elevate. Just if he's able to get, you know, 5 or 6 sacks or something, I could see people saying, oh, maybe it worked out.
They'd be wrong, though. That's the thing. They would not be right about that thing. That would be an incorrect opinion.
He would be mistakenly getting credit.
Yes. And I mean, like, I don't want to blame him. It's not his fault, but it just seems like the Saints, after years of making mistakes, had 1 year where they kind of just chilled and were really good. And then now they're back to making the same mistakes they might have made in the past. But like, otherwise, I think their offseason was fine. I mean, I like Cameron Meredith. I think he was a useful signing at the price they got him at. Ben Watson makes sense to bring him back as a, you know, he's not going to be a dominant tight end by any means, but a red zone threat and someone who can block to replace Kobe Fleener, who they cut. I don't want to know because he's not that much older than me. Like, he's
37.
Older than me?
That's 37.
That's 4 years older than me. He's great.
That's real old.
That's so mean. So mean.
That's real.
But yeah, I think the defense is going to be really good, but I just the Davenport trade, you gotta be so right. And I just don't trust that they're righter than history. So I gave them a C-.
I'm going to go C+ just because I like the aforementioned defensive signings. I like the prices they paid for them as well. I mean, you know, again, we were saying, oh, New Orleans, old habits, but at least they didn't sign any stupid contracts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously the loss of draft capital, you can factor into that. But I don't know. I like those players that they added.
Well, speaking of bad habits, I kind of like what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers did this offseason. I'm a little worried about it. But I mean, they were a team that they were 32nd in defensive DVOA last year. They had problems up into the lineup. And granted, you know, like, they had some injuries. But they're a team that for years now have had two really talented players in Gerald McCoy and Levante David. And they've surrounded them with mostly mistakes. And so this offseason, without much of a pass rush, with that major holes in the secondary, they went out and really invested. They traded for JPP and gave up a draft pick in the process, which he might not work out, but he's at least a viable number one pass rusher. Vinnie Curry came over from the Eagles. Bo Allen came over from the Eagles. Mitch Unrein is there to add depth. They drafted Vita Vea, who I'm guessing you're a fan of because he's from Washington. Took two cornerbacks in the second round. I mean, they added a lot of pieces to a defense that needed a lot of help.
Yeah, I'm still, I mean, this defense was bad in every possible way.
Yes.
I'm still concerned about the secondary, although, you know, the best way to help a secondary is to load up the pass rush, and they certainly did that. So that should, I agree, that'll help a lot. I like Vita Vea. I like that signing. Although I wanted them, I was shocked they took him and not, it's been like,
a
month since the draft, and I'm already,
Jeron Payne, right?
No, the FSU kid who I loved, and obviously now,
Derwin James.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah, so I thought that was just such a natural fit for him to help mm-hmm. that secondary. He's so versatile. But so they've got, you know, they're rocking with Chris Conte, Keith Tandy. I'm looking at the depth chart right now.
Just the way Brent Grimes, said, who's just the way you said Keith Tandy. Like, I don't want anyone to ever say my name that way. Bill Barnwell. Like, that's just like
Hargraves, Grimes. Who's, you
be
know.
Careful. Be careful, Nina. You know, if you say Brent Grimes' name the wrong way, what's going to happen?
Brent Grimes has been great. He's way been better than anyone expected at his age. So
at
I am not.
Age.
Well, he's an older dude. So, and then, yeah, we got Ryan Smith on your side.
Brent Grimes was born 1 year before me.
Well, you don't play cornerback in the NFL.
Not yet.
I don't know. So I obviously think that bolstering the pass rush, I love the signings, mm-hmm. you know, stealing 2 points from the Eagles is probably a good decision. But I just have a lot of questions about that secondary. I did like the Ronald Jones pick a lot mm-hmm. As a Pac-12 football watcher. I thought mm-hmm. he was very good. I was kind of eyeballing him for Seattle, and I think that should help the run game, which has been absolutely atrocious.
Also, more breaking news when it comes to the NFL. Rashawn Melvin has just picked off Christian Hackenberg in Raiders practice and returned it for a pick six.
Christian Hackenberg threw a pass, though, is the real story there that people saw.
Any and all Christian Hackenberg content I am here for. I'm not going to lie.
We're not doing the AFC, but Rashawn Melvin was a nice signing.
He was,
by the way.
He was a nice signing. I agree. I think the Ryan Jensen signing, it's probably pretty aggressive given that he was only really a center and only really effective for 1 year in Baltimore. But the logic of let's invest in our offensive line behind or in front of Jameis Winston, I can't fault them for that. And I mean, it's not impossible to imagine a scenario where if this team stays healthy, they are an effective team. And there's a lot more to like about this defense than there was this time last year. So I gave them a B plus.
Wow, really? Yeah. I'll go B, but yeah, I mean, there's only so much they could do, you know, sure. given the issues in the second. You know, the Bucs offense was so much better. Jameis Winston's funny because the whole season I was like, oh, you know, he really hasn't taken that step forward. But then when mm-hmm. I started digging into his stats, like there was a period in which he was actually excellent. I think his final game or final two games kind of left a bad taste in people's mouths, but he had mm-hmm. some real highs last season. So I don't think that is going to be an issue for them this season, but I still worry about the defense. I'll go B.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get to the NFC West now. Prepare yourself. Arizona Cardinals, I feel like they were in really bad shape heading into this offseason. They had major cap issues. They knew that Carson Palmer was going to retire. Thought it was pretty likely Carson Palmer was going to retire. Had to make some tough decisions. We're losing Bruce Arians. And I think if you view it from those, under that prism, I think what they did makes a lot of sense. They upgraded the offensive line by signing Justin Pugh. They signed Sam Bradford, which, I mean, I don't know. I don't love Sam Bradford, but it's a short-term deal. And then they traded up to grab Josh Rosen and paid a lot less than what other teams had to pay up or pay to move in the draft. So I feel like all things considered, that's not the worst. The worst job by Steve Keim of sort of working with the hand he had admittedly dealt himself in years past.
Yeah, I mean, the Josh Rosen pick was a huge save for their offseason to me. Because if they hadn't got him or if they had to, you know, give up a ton, I think I would mm-hmm. probably look at it very differently. You know, as someone who roots for another team in the division, I was like, when they got him. Because, you know, I was like hoping they would take Josh Allen. I agree. I think it was just really good value. Their problems are kind of the same as they've always been, right? Mm-hmm. Offensive line. There's question marks there, even though they added Justin Pugh, which, you know, should help. The cornerback position opposite Patrick Peterson stays the worst in football. Like who, let's see. Okay. Brandon Williams.
No.
Ben Wickery. Benny Ben Wickery is, still there. Looks
and
like
they traded for Jamar Taylor, who, It's not great when you're trading for guys the Browns don't want. Like, it just, even if it works out, that's still like, you're shopping in the wrong place.
Yeah. Were you surprised that they let Honey Badger go?
I'm surprised they weren't able to work out something. Like, it seemed like that
especially
was
given the price that Houston got for him. Jeez.
Right. It did seem like there should have been a middle ground that would have made sense for both parties. And, I have to admit, like, I'm someone who thinks, I feel like I'm just gonna come out the wrong way. I like Tyrann Mathieu. I feel like his impact is maybe overrated in terms of what he has offered over the course of his pro career. He had that one awesome season, but really that's the only year where I feel like he's been an impactful player. As a rookie, he was good, maybe overrated. And then, you know, injuries have kind of limited what he can do since. So I don't fault them for not wanting to pay him what he was about to get paid. But I do think that it would have been nice to keep him around, given that there's such a talent outflow. This is a team that sort of like the Niners a few years ago, where like they looked so deep and so talented for so many years to come, and like so many of those young players haven't really worked out.
Yeah, I mean, right. In Kimbiche, looking at the depth chart right now,
John Brown.
You know, but they've added guys who it's worked out. Chandler Jones, Golden Buchanan. You know, I look at this defense and it still looks pretty good to me. The question is just kind of how the Rosen-Bradford dynamic plays out. When does Rosen get in? You know, I don't think this was an ideal landing place for Josh Rosen because the offensive line is so bad. And to me, you know, his only really concerning weakness as a quarterback is the lack of mobility and the fact that he gets hurt, and putting him behind that line is not not optimal for that. So it's not optimal for Sam Bradford either. So that would be a concern, but you know, getting David Johnson back will obviously help a lot.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think if they hadn't gotten Josh Rosen, I would have been pretty harsh on them, Bill, but with getting Josh Rosen where they did, I would give them a B+.
You know where the Cardinals finished in defensive DVOA last year?
I bet it's really high. Top five.
They were fourth in defensive DVOA last year. And that's
good, man.
But, you know, it's even with that enormous hole at cornerback across from Patrick Peterson. I mean, if the stars are there and they play the way that we've seen them play in the past, like, they're going to be good on defense still. So, this was a team that the numbers say they're likely to decline. I think they were pretty good in close games last year. They outperformed their Pythagorean expectation by, I think, a game and a half, but, like, they also had half their season with Drew Stanton and Blaine Gabbert at quarterback. So, like, if they are better at quarterback, things could change for them pretty quickly.
Yep. So I gave him a B+. Where do you think?
I'm a B-. I think it's an okay job. I don't love Sam Bradford.
I'm assuming Rosen gets in there by week four. But,
oh, boy.
Yeah, we'll see.
The Los Angeles Rams, a team that I think are also inspired a lot of very – wow. Are you saying as a Seahawks fan or a view of the moves they've made?
I'm not as high on their moves as
I think you are.
Great. Let's get into this.
why are you so high on the moves they made?
Okay, so, well, we should just recap. I mean, God, can you even recap every single move they've made? So, Cooks.
Sure. Sue.
Sue, Peters, Tlaib. Am I leaving any of the major moves out? Those are the big ones.
Nickel,
right?
Roby Coleman. I believe came back.
Is his name pronounced Nickel or Nickel? Are you just saying Nickel because he's a nickel cornerback?
What, does that not seem unreasonable of me?
Do you think, like, the coaches made him play that position because of his name? Like, what percentage of a role do you think his name has played in him ending up at that position?
Significant. It has to be at least, like, I want to believe that if my parents named me Goalie Barnwell, that I would be playing in the Stanley Cup Finals right now.
Okay, so we can talk about, I still think they have some holes, which is interesting, right?
They do, for sure.
Yeah. But let's just talk about those signings.
Yep.
So, I didn't love the Cook signing, to be honest.
Okay.
I think that, you know, what they're paying him, have they worked out? They're going to try to work out an extension probably.
They're going to work out an extension, but right now he's still on his this contract he signed with the Saints all those years ago.
So Sue and Tlaib, you got to think, are gone after this season.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Marcus Peters is very good, and I'm just bothered.
Doesn't it seem weird that the Chiefs were, like, so aggressive to move on from him?
Yeah, I mean, they are rolling the dice incredibly. Like, we know, I'm a Huskies fan. I know what's up with Marcus Peters. Like, it's no secret that he's, not the chillest dude. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they're definitely rolling. I mean, this team, they are kind of arbitraging these red flags guys, these guys who some teams they don't want anything to do with, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if that's really true for Tlaib or whatever, but they're certainly divisive personalities now. This is a crazy locker room. Crazy.
Right.
But they've got 7-year-old grandpa who appears, you know, is very good at handling that. So I don't know. I it's terrifying to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like accumulation of talent is scary.
Like it could work out and be absolutely terrifying. That's not out of the question. But they gave up a lot of talent to make some of these moves. I mean, this is a team that doesn't have Sammy Watkins, doesn't have Robert Quinn, Connor Barbin's gone, Alec Ogletree's gone, Tremaine Johnson is gone. I mean, some pretty talented players there. So it's not like, you know, they didn't really add anyone besides Sue through free agency. Tilly was a late round pick. They kind of got him as a salary dump, but you know, Peters and Coast cost them serious picks and they didn't draft anybody before the 89th pick in this draft. And
yeah.
I don't know. It might, in the short term, it might be fine. They might have so much talent at some key positions that it could work out for them. But when I think about their 2019 season and how you think about them from 2018, it's like, well, Todd Gurley was the best running back in football last year. Aaron Donald was the best defensive player in football last year. What are the chances that these guys who are at the absolute pinnacle of their profession are just as good the next year? Not because they're bad players or because they were frauds, but just because you have to have so many things go right to be that
right, the health of the offensive line comes to mind as something, right? The extraordinarily healthy Andrew Whitworth, who's almost as old as, who did I call really old earlier? Oh, Ben Watson, yeah. He might be as old as, what is he?
He's 36. John Sullivan, who was gone basically for 2 years, more than 2 years actually, 32, signed a much bigger deal to stick around in Los Angeles. I mean, there's a lot of guys who, you know, they probably got like a 90th percentile performance from last year. And, you know, this is a team that, again, they're top heavy, but there's not a lot of depth on this roster to take over if Todd Gurley gets hurt. Like, if Todd Gurley gets hurt, you're looking at Malcolm Brown as your starting running back. If Jared Goff gets hurt, you're looking at Sean Mannion taking serious snaps for your quarterback. If Andrew Whitworth gets hurt, Joseph Noteboom, their top pick at 89, is probably their starting left tackle. If, you know, if Aaron Donald gets hurt, and then suddenly you have Sue and you have a very thin group of edge rushers and Dominique Easley coming in and playing a more meaningful role. I mean, there's just, you're asking a lot to have all those guys stay healthy.
Sure. I mean, I don't think the quarterback, like, that's true of like most teams.
Fair. Okay. Yes, sure.
But I think it's fair, you know, to point out some of the thinness at some of those positions. And you mentioned the lack of edge rushers, which is of course the huge gaping hole with this team. I mean, just pulling up the death chart, something called a Matt Longacre.
Oh, come on. I've never heard of him. He was okay.
It's a cool name. He what?
Oh, great. He was pretty decent last year. Not great, but like he was okay last year.
Well, I mean, look, we're gonna get to my team and its trash offensive line, and Matt Longacre is probably gonna get, you know, 40 sacks in a single game against them. So
that's also part of
regret criticizing him, but it's a problem. Really, it's a problem. Like, it's a very interesting approach to team building, by the way. You know, especially coming off of a period in the NFL where there was so much emphasis on the pass rush, so much emphasis on getting outside. This is a team that has not invested in that area, and it's kind of fascinating.
Right. And this is a fundamentally different defense from the defense we saw a year ago with Wade Phillips. And I think Wade Phillips is awesome, and I have a lot of faith that he can get the most out of the players he has. But, you know, it's also not crazy to imagine a scenario where it just combusts. Like there's personality wise in terms of the scheme, in terms of, you know, where they stack talent, like there are opportunities for teams to exploit them on the edge, to take advantage of their linebackers who are not very good, you know, to attack them in the secondary where you have guys who, Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib, who are super talented, but who are also extremely aggressive. I mean, you could get a lot of big plays against them if you can beat them with double moves. So yeah. I could see a scenario where it doesn't work out. And I think regardless, like in the short term, I think they're still going to be very good. But when you trade this sort of draft capital, when you don't have these sort of draft picks to work with, you don't really feel it now, but you're going to feel it in a couple of years. So I give them a B minus more so for, I think, even though I don't think it's going to impact them tremendously in 2019, I think it's going to be a thing that's going to hurt them in 2020, 2021, 2022.
Not wrong. I just feel like in the NFL your Super Bowl window is so short that I can't get angry at a team that pushes all of his chips in. And I like a lot of these players. You know, I stand for Marcus Peters. So I don't know. I'll just say this: as a person who roots for a team in the division, I was horrified repeatedly. So I'm going to give them a B+.
All right. The San Francisco 49ers. Speaking of terrifying teams in the NFC West. You don't think so?
Let's talk it out.
Well, are you impressed with what they did this offseason?
Well, I mean, I think the Garoppolo contract, great, you know? I mean, they had to do it. I think it was, again, as I mentioned earlier with Cousins, it wasn't as bad as it could have been for them. It was pretty team-friendly as far as these things go. But, you know, like, I look at this defense, I still have a lot of questions about the secondary. I have a lot of questions about... Yeah, I'm going to say it. It's Richard Sherman. It's really hard to come back from an Achilles, especially at that position, at that age. He could be great. I'm a huge Richard Sherman fan. I would love for him to come back. And, you know, I really do. I would. Okay. I have doubts. Not that upset that the Seahawks let him go. As far as the losses, and we'll get to that, that was not top of the list for me in terms of regret.
Did you see his tweet, I think this week, about asking Niners fans to help him unblock Niners fans he's blocked in the past?
I love that. I love that stuff. I love him. I think he's incredible. That injury, Bill, is not easy to come back from.
I'm just asking, are you emotionally prepared for Richard Sherman to block you on Twitter this season? I'm just asking you.
I keep expecting Kevin Durant to block me on Twitter. He hasn't done it.
He probably has from one of his alt accounts, though, so you got that going.
Yeah, maybe
he
forgot to block me from his main account.
Yes.
Anyway, so they also, I think, don't have a great outside pass rush. I don't think they really address that, okay? Mm-hmm. You know, there's Eric Armstead got hurt last season, and, you know, he could take a step forward, but people are, like, talking Super Bowl for this team, and I'm just kind of in let's hold up a little bit mode.
Jimmy Garoppolo's never lost a football game, so you need to keep that in mind first and foremost. I agree with you. I think the secondary is definitely a question mark. I have a little more faith in their defensive line, I think, than you do. I think Solomon Thomas was decent last year as a rookie, but I think DeForest Buckner is a superstar, like someone who I think is super underrated right now. And they're relatively deep. Like, I think Cassius Marsh, granted, maybe he has not won himself a ton of fans in New England this week, but I think an underrated secondary pass rusher, but I think he's fine. If he's going to be your sixth pass rusher, I think you're doing okay. And I think that this is a pretty young defense. I think it's not unreasonable to think a lot of these guys, former first, second round picks, are going to improve and continue to improve.
For sure.
I think I'm more concerned about the offense, and not because I think Jimmy Garoppolo is bad or anything. I think he's very good, but I don't love the moves they made on the offense this year. I think Mike McClinchy makes total sense, and I think that if they weren't going to re-sign Trent Brown, who they traded to the Patriots, adding McClinchy makes total sense. Interior of this offensive line, they add Weston Richburg, I think a very solid move, a very underrated center, some injury concerns, I think, in his past, but guards, pretty bad. Lincoln Tomlinson and Josh Garnett has not shown much, didn't show much as a rookie and then was out last year. So,
I know where this is going. I know where this is.
I don't even know where this
you
is
You hated
going.
The Jerry McKinnon signing, didn't you?
Oh, of course I did. That's not even a question. Yes. Come on. you have this dude who he was good 2 years ago in a supplemental role, and he was not a good running back over the last couple of years. And you say, okay, well, maybe his offensive line was bad in 2016, and it was. Like, he was not a good running back last year. And this is an offense where Kyle Shanahan has been, like, manufacturing running back since he was a child in the Shanahan offensive schemes. Like, if there's any spot you can save money, it's running back. And they're going out and getting Jerick McKinnon, who has not been good during his pro career. $10 million, for 2018. Basically, he's getting a franchise tag for 2018. Next to Kyle Juszczyk, who you know I'm not a fan of when it comes to contracts. Why? who out there was spending $8 million a year on Jerick McKinnon? They're like, no, we gotta top that.
Yeah, they blew out the market. That was crazy. And I don't really think the upgrade from Carlos Hyde is that significant there. They also added, they've re-signed, I think, Marquise Goodwin, right? But then they drafted Dante Pettis, which to me, with Goodwin, feels a little bit redundant. Obviously, special teams, he'll be a contributor.
Sure.
Dante Pettis, the wide receiver out of Washington who, like, shattered, you know, kickoff return records or whatever. Mm-hmm. But in terms of skill set, it seemed a little bit redundant with Goodwin. I agree with you that I don't think the offense got better. For a grade, I think the Jimmy Garoppolo signing contract probably will elevate it beyond what it would otherwise be just based on the talent added to this team.
Yeah. It also does seem weird just because obviously the safety market really hasn't developed. There's still a lot of safety talent out there. And they their safeties are not that great. Like, you would think that that would be a spot where maybe they would go re-sign Eric Reed, or they would go and sign Kenny Vaccaro or somebody. And they haven't added a ton there. So that's a little surprising to me.
That's fraud. Okay, I'm going to give them a... I just like I said, the Garoppolo signing bolsters it, so I'll give them a B.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would give them a B. I feel
that
like,
deal is very team-friendly.
Sure. It's a lot of money up front. Like, Jimmy Garoppolo...
Yes, but they've got money to spend.
He got a check. I guess he had a direct deposit, but like, he has a direct deposit that has $38 million on it right now. That's crazy to me. Like, I can't fathom that.
What would be the first thing, if you got a $38 million direct deposit, what would you buy?
Okay, so...
And not something that, like, would require an investment, like a house, or you think about it money.
Like, it would... An Ames chair is what it would be. That's the most expensive thing I can imagine myself buying. When I signed my ESPN contract, I bought, like, a $1,200 couch. Like, an okay couch. Like, a slightly more expensive than IKEA-level couch.
Ames chair. That's really funny. I would buy the most luxurious dog bed for Lenny. I don't know what that is, though. I haven't even expensive.
I saw a $1,300 luxury beanbag chair in a store the other day, and I kind of wanted to get that for Maggie.
I'm looking at a $1,300, it looks like a velvet armchair available at Neiman Marcus for your dog. It's handcrafted, tufted dog bed with The crazy thing is, Lenny wouldn't even like this. Like, it's Lenny's ideal dog bed is just all of my clothing stitched together into a giant fabric thing for him to lay on.
That's the problem, I feel like, is that you would buy that expensive dog bed, and then the first time your dog, like, walked over to it and then laid on the floor next to it, you would go crazy.
Yeah, it's like when people buy stuff for their kids and they play with the box.
Yes.
All right, shall we get to the
main final event? I mean, the first thing on my list.
You start.
I'll tell you what, the first thing on my list, I have listed all the ins and outs. The out, the first person on the way out is Tom Cable.
Yes, okay, thank you. Thank you, Bill. Let's start on that positive note, because that immediately should elevate it like 4 grades, at least.
But...
That's a win.
The first person on my in list is Brian Schottenheimer.
I mean, let's talk through this. So I wasn't happy with it, with the signing was announced, but I haven't talked myself into liking it, but I've talked myself into not being so furious on it that my nails dig into my hands and draw blood. Because, you know, I think there's a lot of validity to the he's never had a good situation. When you go back and look through the quarterbacks he's worked with, the situations he's been in, there is some defensible argument, I guess, that he's been in tough spots.
Mm-hmm. So. I mean, you're not convincing me, but that is true.
It's true.
I think he has been part of why of those have been tough spots. I don't think he's done necessarily a lot to improve the situations he's been in. And I don't, like, I had my issues with Daryl Bevel, but I do think that, like, given the constraints the offensive line was providing with him, like, I don't think they could have done a lot better than what they did.
Yeah, I think, you know, with Bevel, the sense from what we've been hearing from the coaches and whatever and Shiner and stuff, you've heard a lot that Wilson wasn't really responding to him. And I don't think that's in a, like, Wilson was, like, going earmuffs and being like, da 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 da, when Daryl Bevel was trying to tell him what to do. But I think there was some sort of disconnect, okay, between them, and, you know, that's the kind of stuff where we can't quantify. We have no idea what's going on in the locker room. And so if they say that it's gone stale and that the offense wasn't really responding and whatever, sure. The fact that they seem to be going to a let's just run the ball every time. I mean, so the current debate tearing Seahawks Twitter apart for the last 4 months, actually it's not current, is whether or not the team should put resources into running the ball given how bad it was last season. But obviously that was mostly because of the offensive line and not because of the actually, I think, you know, the fact that they had to trot out like 20 running backs to jump. And they had a horrible rushing offense. You can look at the numbers. I won't relegate them. So, given that it's the offensive line, this offseason, really, that's been an interesting area because, as you mentioned, they replaced Tom Cable with Mike Sulari, which I think is an upgrade. Mm-hmm. Anything is an upgrade from Tom Cable. But they didn't make changes at the offensive line other than signing DJ Fluker, which is, you know, obviously not, doesn't inspire a lot of enthusiasm, although I think he's been better at run blocking, which seems to be the direction that they're going in with the line. You get a full season from Dwayne Brown on the left side. And then they seem to be going for an approach where they're just kind of trying to develop continuity, which is something they've not done.
Sure.
In past seasons, his offensive line has been shuffled around. They're going to have Posich, who was, I think, a third-round pick?
Second-round pick.
Maybe second? Second. And Ifedi, who's struggled a lot, and they've been going back and forth from tackle, you know, to I think they're going to try to stick with them and see if they can progress this season. Now, we have no reason to believe they can, but that is the strategy.
Sure. And, I mean, there's a lot of draft assets put into that. Dwayne Brown, of course, traded for a second-round pick.
Yes.
Pojic and Britt, second-round picks. Jermaine Ifedi, a first-round pick is probably the nicest thing I can say about him. So, I mean, you know, it's not like they're running out UFAs anymore. So you figure, okay, we're going to give Mike Sulari some time to develop those guys. That makes sense to me. I don't necessarily see the logic in drafting Rashad Penny in the first round, though.
Yeah, I mean, there's no, it was insane. But, I like him. Man, I've watched a lot of Rashad Penny highlights. Mm-hmm. He is good. And we'll see, right? But I get it. I get why they like him, but it absolutely made no sense. No sense. I mean, yeah, there was just, it defied logic that they selected him there. Even though I like him a lot as a player, that spot was bonkers to me. The other thing, by the way, when we're talking about the offensive line, we should add that they signed Ed Dixon and in the third round picked up Will Disley, the Washington tight end, clearly focusing, again, blocking.
Sure. And I think in the past, like, you know, the defense has been able to cover for the offense's woes, and then, well, I mean, I can just read the names out. Cliff Averill, Michael Bennett, Richard Sherman, Sheldon Richardson, Michael Wilhoit, Jeremy Lane, and most likely Cam Chancellor, all not going to be participating for the Seahawks this year. And I mean, this is a defense that needed a lot of help, and I don't know that it got much help this offseason.
Yeah, so they, well, Cam is, I think, still a little iffy, but yeah, everyone else. To me, the Averill is huge, although he was out most of last season. And then Sheldon Richardson, I really thought they would re-sign him, so I was surprised. I think they like, so right now we're rolling with Frank Clark, who has been good. Jaron Reed, Nas Jones was a rookie who looked pretty good and flashed a bit. And then they've got, like, Kavorius Mingo, you know, and they drafted Rasheem Green, like when we're talking about the outside. So the defensive line has a lot of issues. Oh, they did sign Tom Johnson, which I really liked. The Seahawks have a good from the Vikings, who is, you know, I think a very solid veteran, and the Seahawks have a very strong record of integrating veteran defensive linemen and them playing really well over the last 4 or 5 years.
Do you think they're ever going to actually cut Malik McDowell or just talk about it for the entire length of his rookie contract?
I don't know what the deal is with that. I mean, it's just a really sad story. And honestly, a lot of the Seahawks' difficulties have hinged upon that, frankly, quite just, you know, the loss of that pick, basically. So I have no idea. Oh, they also re-signed, sorry, I'm just looking at the depth chart. Justin Coleman, Deion Jordan, who flashed a bit at the end. So that's kind of an interesting one. See, a lot of reclamation projects. And then, Justin Coleman and Bradley McDougald, who would be the sensible Cam Chancellor replacement. Both, I think, I'm a little higher than you. Really nice players. Justin Coleman, the nickel cornerback who they got in the Patriots deal, was really good. And this is the thing, Bill. Like, this team is going to be worse, okay?
Yeah.
But they didn't make any stupid signings. There wasn't, like, the Eddie Lacy deal, the Luke Jokel deal. Like, I'm fine with all these signings. They got good values. The problem is, because of the losses, which many of which were unavoidable, they're just going to be worse.
Are you excited about Michael Dixon as the punter?
Are you so excited?
Are you, like, if you had to rank the Seahawks in terms of your excitement level about them heading into the season, are number one and number two Shaq Griffin and Michael Dixon, the 2 fifth-round picks from this year's draft?
Number one is that they kept Earl Thomas.
Okay.
That would have been unforgivable for me. Like, we talked about all these losses, and I mentioned the Richardson being one I didn't like. I, you know, said Sherman. I'm not as devastated about that as some people, and kind of it was inevitable to me. Earl Thomas would have been devastating. Like, Earl Thomas would have been like, all right, like, pack it in this season. So the fact that they – no, I'm serious. And – oh, stop.
They haven't re-signed Earl Thomas yet, though, so he is a free agent after this year.
I don't know if they will. Yes, and I don't. I would like them to personally. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, the trade was a very real possibility until the third round of the draft, and I was very tense about it. And I think that is the thin line separating this between a lost season and a season that'll at least still be interesting in some regards. Like, if you still have Bobby Wagner and Earl Thomas in the middle, mm-hmm. you've got two, you know, all pro caliber players.
So is it an A plus, an A for you? Like how high is it in terms of your, cause I feel like you're talking yourself into it pretty hard.
No, it's a C minus for me.
And a that's C minus?
Yeah. I mean, even though a lot of those things were inevitable, they still happened, right? Like Sherman or Cliff. Like, there's nothing the Seahawks could have done. I think that's maybe the difference between me and some of the people criticizing the offseason is I saw a lot of these things as inevitable and mm-hmm. the product of bad luck and trades and whatever and bad drafts in previous years, which were horrible. But they happened. So I don't blame the team for a lot of these things, but I still, you know, it wasn't a good offseason by any means.
What were the odds that they would move on from Tom Cable and you would give them a C minus?
Oh, that's also bolstering. Yeah, the grade. That, you know what? C plus. I didn't even, like, that's, we really thought he would never go. I mean, I had, it's like when you have bed bugs or like something in your house, like pigeon mites, and you just gradually sort of reconcile the idea that this is never going to go away.
Wait, what?
And then suddenly you wake up one morning and they're gone. That's how I felt.
What are pigeon mites? I've never even heard of them before.
My friend in New York had them for a year, I remember. And they're like bed bugs, but they eat stuff.
Oh, that's, so even worse than bed bugs.
Yes. Tom Cable is, yes. Well, anyways, you do the math.
All right, I'm going to give them a C. I feel like I'm not as high on some of the other additions they've made, but I think it's mostly things that were already sort of, they put themselves in the situation before this offseason, and given what they had to do this offseason, I think I don't love Schottenheimer, I don't love drafting a running back in the first round, I don't love getting rid of the coordinators, but I think overall they sort of were stuck before they got here. Now, Nina Kimes, you're never stuck here. It's always a pleasure to have you on, though. Where can people check out the various things you do for ESPN?
just follow my Twitter at Mina Kimes. I share everything there. I think this comes out today, right? So I'm on Around the Horn Wednesday. You can check me out there.
Tremendous. Mina, thank you so much.
You should really watch the season of The Bachelor, though. I think people would really enjoy your tweets.
ESPN/ABC employee to the end. Mina Kimes, thank you.